Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Today marks 1 year since news broke of the widespread deadly COVID-19 outbreak at the Holyoke Soldiers Home. Nearly 80 veterans died as a result of that outbreak. Now, WBUR's Miriam Wasser was one of the first reporters on that story and stayed on it as it unfolded. Today, we invited Miriam to look back on that heartbreaking story and what has happened since with us. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Miriam.
Hi, Tiziana. Thanks for having me.
So, Miriam, take us back to when the outbreak first happened. How did you learn about it?
Sure. So I was very new to covering this beat. As you know, I'm typically an environmental reporter, but had volunteered to start covering nursing homes and long-term care facilities as the pandemic began. And at the time, I remember I was just trying to keep an aggregated list of which long-term care facilities had outbreaks. That felt like something that would be possible to even do. And on Sunday, March 22nd, the Soldiers Home put out a press release and said it had one resident that tested positive and that this patient was isolated. So I added that to the story online. And the following day, I got an anonymous email from someone who said that they worked at the Soldiers Home. And this person was really upset and said that CDC health guidelines weren't being followed, that the leadership team was negligent, and that just the situation overall was a lot worse than anyone was letting on. So over the course of the next week or so, I continued corresponding with this person, and I just got more and more details. Like, they sent me a photo of the refrigerated truck that had to be brought in to deal with the excess of dead bodies that the morgue couldn't handle. And I was working on this story, trying to figure out what was happening, when on the evening of March 30th, so 1 year ago today, the state put out a kind of cryptic press release saying that the superintendent of the home, and this is the Bennett Walsh, a retired Marine, it said that he had been put on administrative leave. And a little while later, they confirmed that 11 residents had died and that more were sick. And that's how it all unfolded.
And then, Miriam, things happened pretty quickly. The state almost immediately launched an investigation into the outbreak. That resulted in a scathing 174-page report. Remind us what came out of that report.
Yeah, I think scathing is a very accurate term. So you're talking about the independent investigation that was done by attorney Mark Perlstein. And that report came out in June and concluded that, you know, while no single action caused the outbreak to be so bad, things did get so bad because of a series of chronic structural problems and also poor decision-making on the part of the facility's leadership team. So some of those chronic problems included things like short staffing, a lack of sufficient PPE, a very insular leadership team that was known to be like really vindictive, and a Department of Veteran Affairs that apparently knew about a lot of these problems but didn't do enough to fix them. And, you know, some of the bad decision-making included rotating staff across floors and not properly isolating sick residents. But by far the worst decision was the one on March 27th to combine two floors of dementia patients. So I know you and I have talked about this, but just to recap, you know, the leadership team said that with so many employees calling out sick, it had no choice but to consolidate two floors of residents. And this move mixed veterans who had the virus with those who didn't. And in that report, Perlstein calls this decision utterly baffling and the opposite of infection control. And Attorney General Maura Healey also ran her own investigation. I think that's worth pointing out. And the big outcome from that was that she brought criminal charges against the former superintendent, Bennett Walsh, and the former medical director, David Clinton. So the outcome of that still remains to be seen. Yeah.
All right. So that remains to be seen. Where do things stand now overall?
Sure. So in the last year, the home tragically has lost 77 residents to COVID-19. And according to the latest information from the state, pretty much all residents have received at least one dose of the vaccine. Most have actually had both. And most staff are also vaccinated. The state is currently searching for a new superintendent for the home. And earlier today, I talked to the union rep that represents many of the employees, and he said that staff are very anxiously awaiting that decision. You know, they're hoping that whoever is chosen is warm and personable and is open to hearing their opinions and getting their feedback, because that was something that the previous administration was not known for. And I think we have a bit of that conversation with the union rep. His name is Corey Bumbrady.
It was constant. It was always scary. Our members were always exposed. We had 34 of our members leave employment for various reasons, all COVID-related, from April 1st, 2020 to the beginning of March 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, as you can hear in Corey's voice, like, this whole past year has been so traumatic for staff who were there through this whole ordeal. And Corey also told me that he's concerned that the facility is still short-staffed and that a lot of members are still, or a lot of his members, a lot of the employees there are still really struggling with trauma.
So we have family members too, Miriam. Our producer Paris Alston spoke with Cheryl Melendrinos, who is the daughter-in-law of Harry Melendrinos, who died in the home at age 89. Here's what Cheryl said.
When he wasn't here for his 90th birthday in September, that was hard. Thanksgiving and Christmas, they were hard. Knowing that if better infection control procedures were in place sooner, it makes you kind of sad and angry all at once. Because you wonder, like, would Harry still be here?
It's painful, Miriam. What are you hearing about the longer-term impact on the families who were affected by this?
Absolutely. I mean, I think what these families went through is just awful. And I've talked to Cheryl many times in the last year, and she is a true advocate for reforming this home. But, you know, I remember really early on, one of the first stories I did about this after this whole story broke open was about the lack of communication between the facility's leadership and families. So people were watching the news and seeing all of this terrible stuff about the virus just wreaking havoc on the home. And they couldn't even get through to a nurse on the floor to check in on their loved ones. So, I mean, luckily that improved relatively quickly, but it was awful for everyone involved early on. I will say, you know, to end on a more positive note, I do think that one of the good things that came out of this was maybe the way that families bonded together. There's a really strong Facebook group of people, and they console each other and also work on advocacy projects. So they're pushing the state to build a new soldier's home, a new facility. They're advocating for accountability, and they're really doing what they can to keep the pressure up. And I don't think they're going to let what happened be forgotten.
Well, that is WBUR's Miriam Wasser on this one-year anniversary of the outbreak at the Holyoke Soldiers Home. Miriam, thank you.
Thanks for having me.